friends. It is Saturday, March 9th, 2019. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the rainy Chicago suburbs. I am delighted that you have decided to join me today at republicbroadcasting.org. I highly recommend that you also visit and subscribe to SpingolaSpeaks.net and ScreeningSandyHook.net. I do not access my regular email address during the program. So, if you have questions or comments during the program, just email those questions to comment@spingola.email. And if you inadvertently add an S at the end of comments, it will still get to me. I invite you to visit our friendly Spingola Speaks chat room at spingola.chatango.com. If you wish to review the names of the guests that I have had the pleasure of interviewing on this program, just visit spingola.com and click the radio schedule button on the left side of the page. I also have the names of future guests. In both instances, I have links for those guests, along with relevant links for their subject matter. We will be taking calls in the third hour. I'll adjust my mic. Our producer is so wonderful. He fixes everything. Okay, thank you. Our producer is wonderful, and I appreciate so much the RBN efforts and their wonderful producers and the people that work for RBN. It's been such an honor and a pleasure for me to have a radio program on their network. Anyway, we will be taking calls at 800-313-9443 in the third hour. My guest today for the first hour is Thomas Goodrich. And every time I start thinking about his writing, I get very emotional because Thomas, and a lot of people, friends, call him Mike because that's his middle name, or Thomas Michael Goodrich. And he writes with his heart. And so when I start talking about his work, I always get emotional because I remember reading his books and feeling what he was writing and feeling the emotion that he was writing with. So I always get emotional. I'm an emotional person anyway. That's just the way I work, I suppose. Anyway, he has written numerous books, one of which is Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944 through 1947. That came out in 2010. And I believe that is when I purchased the hardcover. I read it. I thought, I have to talk to this gentleman. And I found him, and we scheduled a radio program. And we've had many conversations, radio conversations, as well as private conversations. Since that time, I consider him a friend, and really appreciate his work immensely. I immensely appreciate his work. His latest book, Summer, 1945, Germany, Japan, and the Harvest of Hate. I categorize that in the same way. Well, all of his books, he writes all of his books with heart. He's written wonderful, wonderful books, and I encourage you to read them. His website is thomasgoodrich.com, and you may read about his history and see the hellstormdocumentary.com, and you really need to read his work. It'll touch your heart, and and you will be educated regarding World War II. Thomas, welcome to the program. Are you there?
Yes, Deanna, I am here.
Hi.
Hi.
How
my
are
friend.
You? My dear friend, how are you?
I'm doing well. I hope you are as well.
I am.
There's no complaints at this end. We both have our issues, of course, that we're dealing with, as we mentioned to each other a little earlier. But that's life. We both know all about it. I want to thank you so much for your introduction. You made a comment about writing with my heart. Yes, there's method in that madness. I wanted to write with such emotion, such passion, and I wanted to tell stories so realistically. Some people consider it graphically, but I did not want people to forget what they were reading. When I was writing a book, I never wanted it to be forgotten. The subject matters I was writing upon, World War II, the Indian Wars, things like the American Civil War, I wrote in a way that I wanted folks to experience what I experienced during my research and writing and rewriting. I wanted these people, the people I was writing about, that is, no matter what the subject, to come alive, to be real people, more or less like a, as if I were a, let's say a news reporter talking about current events of the past, if there is such a thing. Of course there isn't, but making things so tangible and present that it would be as if you knew the people personally. And especially with the most recent books you mentioned about World War II, I wanted people, when they read these books, to never forget it, to never forget what Germany and then Japan went through during World War II. I wanted people to remember it. I wanted them to read it until they totally understood it. Then I was hopeful that people would eventually act upon what they found out in these books. That's my drive. What keeps me moving is to tell a story as honestly and accurately and without my own bias as I possibly could, so that people could have this sense that they're actually experiencing some of this themselves. And I felt if they could do that, then they will remember what was said in these books, and they wouldn't forget it. And perhaps someday either they or their children could make a difference in the world.
Indeed.
Another subject that I want to mention right now is I've in the last 30 years done, I would say hundreds, probably 300, 400, 500, I've never stopped to count them, interviews in the mainstream press. And then, of course, after I made my move into the white nationalist alt-right movement, in the alt-right, alt-media, that is, I've done hundreds. And, you know, I still get nervous every time I go on. There's the stress level. It goes up. I suppose, I know it's going to be that way the rest of my life. But, you know, every time I hear your opening bumper music, a lilting song that precedes every show, I de-stress. I start de-stressing and start feeling very good about myself, about my chances ahead. So it's a wonderful bumper music, by the way. And, well, for instance, Dennis Fetchew, I've done a lot of his programs, and his bumper music is the opposite. It's it's a really out there type of stuff. And so, but anyway, just had to get that out of the way.
Well, thank you. I I remember my first program on RBN. It was a Saturday night. They took a chance on me because I approached them and said, "You're not well represented. You don't have any women broadcasting." So they gave me this spot at 11 o'clock at night, and I'm an early morning person. So I took a nap. I tried to take a nap. I was so nervous for that first program. But since then, I feel okay. I feel like I'm just talking to one or two people, my guest, and that's who I concentrate on.
You know, as I said, I've done a lot of interviews. I've only done one from your side of the microphone, though, and that was enough. I've done it one time. Believe me, I have got the easy seat here. You've got the tough part. I know a little bit about what you do, and that is really difficult. To you, it's hopefully second nature, and it seems that way, but no, you've got the really tough spot over there. This is there's nothing to this now, the interview, even though the stress level is still there.
Well,
because I guess, you know, when was the last time we spoke?
It was last year, actually. Mm-hmm. It was, let me see if I keep a record of every program I do. We spoke,
seems like it's been at least 2 years.
It was Saturday, April 7th of 2018. So it's just coming up on 1 year. It was Saturday, April 7th, 2018.
I was living in Denmark then.
Yes, you were. And we were on for 2 hours, and we talked about your book. We talked about several things, but you were on for 2 hours with me, and we had a wonderful conversation, as we always do. I think we always do.
Yeah, I knew it had been a while. I didn't realize that long, but
that's only a year. Yeah.
Yeah, you are a friend. It's that's the wonderful thing about cyberspace. It's transcending the normal friendships we used to make before cyberspace. You almost had to meet somebody, look in their eyes, shake their hands before you were friends. It was almost impossible to do it by writing letters. But now with cyberspace, we're talking. We can be good friends, and we are, without ever meeting each other, which we haven't.
Exactly.
So this is a wonderful time to be alive, in my opinion. But anyway, and one more question for you. You mentioned when you began, how long have you been doing this?
Since October 23rd, 2010. And I interviewed you the first time. Let me tell you when I interviewed you. Let me see here. Let's see. I see Clint Richardson. I interviewed him in 2010. Let's see. I think it took me a while to find you. 'Cause it took me just a little while, but I did manage to find you. And I had done some work on Eisenhower's death camps, and I also talked early on with F. William Engel, and I interviewed you the first time. I'm looking at my 2011 schedule. My program used to be from I had a daily program. I went from a Saturday night at 11 o'clock. Within a very short time, I went to a daily program Monday through Friday for 1 hour. Then it went to 2 hours. I have no idea how I ever managed to do a 2 hour program 5 days a week. That's... because it was a very difficult. It takes a lot of time. It seemed the only thing I was doing was arranging interviews, and not that I'm not complaining. But it was kind of difficult, and at the same time, I was writing my trilogy. I was writing my trilogy at that time, and so I also interviewed you on another program. Oh my goodness, I've interviewed you a lot.
Yeah, I know.
Oh my goodness.
Let me say this. My book Hellstorm was published hardback in 2010. And prior to that, I'd written books with mainstream publishers, university presses, whatever. And so I didn't have any trouble pitching them, promoting them, publicizing them, because they were not so controversial and they were with mainstream publishers. But once Hellstorm came along, that all ended, of course.
I wonder why. Yeah.
Well, you know, you were the very first alt-right media person to contact me about an interview. You.
Your book was incredible.
And that helped me understand a lot about alt media. Basically, from then on, I never did another mainstream interview after that. Not only because I haven't been asked, although they're very rare, of course, but I do not want to be hogtied. I don't want to be in a straitjacket when I'm talking with someone. I want to say exactly what's on my mind, and only through the alt media, beginning with your interview, did I feel totally at home to describe what I had to describe for the listeners. So it was it was a transitional period for me, and it was a great epiphany to realize that I had reached home finally after all those years of thinking about certain things and pondering and running them through my brain. Finally, I understood the way the world really operates, and you were the first person to give me that bump up, that edge. And I want to thank you again and again and again for doing that. I was shocked. I was shocked that anybody would want to interview me at that point, of course, because none of the old media had even answered my query for interviews, understanding the nature of the book and where it went and where it didn't go. And so it was something that was kind of a bit startling that anybody would want. And so it was Deanna Spingola, and you're right, I remember you had the daily program. Then I think you did also have a weekly program, but the daily program, yes, I remember that. By the way, I got to add this little note too about radio in general. I once was married to a female host, of course, a female.
Okay. Well, now we know more, something else about you.
Well, okay, that was a stupid thing to say. I was once married to a mainstream media hostess who had a weekly program, Monday through Friday, 3 days, 3 hours per day. And I was the program director for that show. In other words, I had to get everybody, all the guests, for those 3 hours each day. And sometimes the shows were only a half hour long, depending on who the person was. So I sometimes had to get anywhere from 3 to 6 people per day. So I know a little bit about that aspect of the radio. That is the getting guests going, the programming, a radio program. And yeah, that's something else I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy, is trying to get this going. It's like herding cats. It's trying to keep people on the page. In other words, nobody canceling, because that wrecks your entire itinerary to come. So I get that part. But nevertheless, I mentioned that I did do one hosting myself, and brother, it's a different animal altogether. So all honor to you, my lady. Thank you very much for what you do, and do it so well, too, by the way.
Thank you. I once had somebody, well, not once, but this one time, twice, two memorable times, when somebody canceled exactly 5 minutes before the program.
I know the feeling.
And because they found out that I was, well, gosh, what would they call me something. Oh. Anyway, we will be right back with our friend Thomas Goodrich. Be right back. Stay with us.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. with all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All righty, we are back. Our guest this first hour is Thomas Goodrich. He is the author of many, many wonderful books, including Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944 through 1947. Came out in 2010. I have the hardcover version of this book. He also wrote his latest book, Summer 1945, Germany, Japan, and the Harvest of Hate. He's written many, many great books. I was just looking at our, you were on my program. Let's see, you were on my program on April 1st, 2013. You were also on my program, on October 23rd, 2012, exactly 2 years after I started the program. And one of the stories that we talked about on one of the programs was about the young mother, the young woman that was murdered in Florida. And it was just a really difficult book to go through. You were on the edge of your seat. I was on the edge of my seat. And by the way, I want to make a correction. Thomas's name is Michael Thomas Goodrich, and his friends call him Mike. I've always known him by Thomas, but I just know him as my friend. whether it's Thomas or Mike, he's my friend. But anyway, we've had some really wonderful conversations, and I'm trying to find this other notation where you were on. It was just that one book that you talked about.
About the true crime book, the only one I've written.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very personal to me. I knew the father. I knew the family, and it's the only true crime book I've done, and I hope it's my last, quite honestly, because I'm a historian, and generally the people I write about are no longer with us. And so it makes it a little bit easier. In other words, it's a different sort of book when you're writing about people who are still alive, who are still hurting, who are still in pain. Or in the case of this true crime book, the murderer who's still on death row. It's the type of thing where it's uncomfortable to me to actually talk to somebody who experienced the crime. Now, I did some of that with Hellstorm. I interviewed people who actually suffered. Some of the things that occurred into this book, they were older folks, of course. And that's not pleasant. That's not a pleasant thing to do. It's a necessary evil, so to speak, to actually hear in their own words what they went through. But in the true crime book, that was a daily event to actually talk to those people every day. And although I tried to talk to the murderer himself, the man who's on death row now for killing this young lady, I'm glad he turned me down, because I had been asked 20 years ago, when I still was living in Kansas. I was living in a small crossroads of maybe 100 people outside of the capital, Topeka. And one day, the preacher's daughter was out on her new mountain bike. They were a health-conscious family, but he was the preacher, a local preacher of the church, and she was out on her 12th birthday enjoying this new mountain bike she'd gotten for her birthday. When, guess what? Some individual who was at a halfway house, saw her, decided he wanted to take her. He did. He turned her every which way but loose, and then he killed her. And for 2 days, there was a search for her body. And, of course, I'm telling you, it's a very small community, and you could hear the sirens coming and going in the village. And it was a terrible story. But the point, okay, I'll get to the point of this. A year or so later, the father, the preacher, the man who lost his daughter, asked me to write her story. And I'd never thought of writing a true crime book prior to that, but I thought about it a bit. The reason I had to tell the poor man no is pretty selfish, actually. I did not want to have to go to that prison and talk to this preacher who killed this 12-year-old girl, raped her, of course, all of that. I did not want to go speak with him. I didn't want to sit across the plexiglass looking at him day after day, getting to know his story, perhaps getting to understand him. And who knows, perhaps...
And he was a drifter?
No, not a drifter. But he was staying... he had been convicted of a prior sexual crime, waiting for the verdict or the actual sentencing. And that's what he did. But I didn't want to perhaps take a chance of actually learning to like the guy. I didn't want to do that.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Okay, we will be right back. 3 minutes.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today for the first hour is Michael Thomas Goodrich, the author of numerous books, and the one that we were talking about the young woman that was murdered, and the name of it was Toledo Blade, the true story of the abduction, rape, and murder of a cop's daughter, and that was published in 2012, and we had an interview on April 1st of 2013 on that book, and I read it, and I just... It was a book I could not put down. I can see why you wouldn't want to talk with a person who had committed such a crime, because you don't want... I think I agree with you. Who would want to even consider that somebody who would do such a horrendous thing could have any speck of humanity? Mm-hmm. Within their soul. And it reminds me of the story just recently of this guy. I'm going to call him a guy, which is kind of a derogatory term. I usually say gentleman, but there's nothing gentlemanly about him. He saw this 13-year-old girl get off a school bus and decided that he wanted to kidnap her, so he murdered her parents and kidnapped her and held her hostage. She was able to escape. But I can't, for the life of me, imagine why anybody would do such a dastardly thing.
You know, I think personally, now I'm shooting from the hip here, but personally, I think we need punishments to fit the crime. I don't think what we're doing now is making it. There's simply too many hideous, terrible, vile crimes going on in America, at least. And it doesn't seem to be abating at all. In fact, quite the opposite. It seems to be accelerating. I don't think we're hearing half of the crimes that are being committed right now. And when I say punishment to fit the crimes, I really mean that. I mean, if some guy who's taken a 13-year-old girl, or in the case of my book, Toledo Blade, taken a happy, healthy, 21-year-old wife and mother, someone who never heard a fly, someone who is an asset to our society, our communities, when they take them and do what this man did to this innocent victim, I think that he should be treated the same way, personally. And not only that, I know how outrageous this may sound, but I think it should be done in such a way that we all are aware of it and see it. If we want to buy it on a pay TV type of operation, watch his torture, watch him being rammed up and down in his orifices with a broomstick, as he did with this lady, and doing the things he did with her, and then ultimately, of course, as she pleaded for mercy, actually putting a bullet in her brain. All of that. And I think it might have a calming effect upon some of the perverts out there who might even think about doing such a thing, to know that they were going to be treated exactly the way they treated their victims, and that the world would see it. Now, I know that that's a bit outrageous, but hey, I'm a bit outrageous. I'm tired of the crime all around us. Yes, if there weren't so many things of a historical nature that need to be addressed, so many lies and so much adrenaline-driven pop propaganda, probably true crime is what I should do, although it would take a toll on me, just like the writing about the historical events. But whatever we're doing, it's not working. Our legal system is absolutely shattered. When these creatures can get a 25-year sentence and be out in 7 or 10 after they've committed these grievous crimes, that's broken. I'm sorry. And then many of them just go right back to doing what they're doing because that's the way they're wired.
Right.
It's not working, not at all. Building more prisons doesn't cut it either. That's penalizing the taxpayer.
Indeed. Absolutely. That is what it is doing.
But I do watch what I watch TV at all, and that's very seldom. What I do watch is true crime, the forensics, the files, things like that. And so I do know a little bit about what I'm talking about. And I just cannot believe that right now, as we speak, murderers are walking the streets now because a judge gave him a light sentence and believed that man could be, or woman can be, rehabilitated and actually let them out for murder, double murders sometimes, triple murders, within 7 to 10 years. That's broken. I'm sorry. And it's a, let's face it, Deanna, we both have similar carbon datings, and we grew up with this around us everywhere we went. Now, when I was a child, I do not remember so much the crime wave as it was then. Yes, there were people like, in my neck of the woods, Hickok and Smith, who killed a farm family one November morning out in western Kansas, cut the throat of the father and killed with shotguns the mother and the two children. There were those type of things going on, but they were sensational. They made news everywhere. It wasn't so common that we ignore them. Now we're in a period where it's nothing to hear about somebody breaking into a home, killing everybody there, and then getting away with it, or just simply doing a rather light stretch in prison. Death penalty, it's not working. When somebody like occurred here in Tampa, Florida, a guy, not a gentleman, but an individual who made contact when they were looking for a place to stay in Tampa on their vacation, a mother and two daughters. Well, he offered to take them out on his boat on Tampa Bay that night to give them a real Gulf Coast tropical evening in Florida. Well, instead of them enjoying it, of course, he tied them all up, raped them, and then threw them alive overboard with concrete blocks around their feet. Yeah, and he spent, I think, the next 25 years in prison waiting for death. That's the death row. It's actually life row. And then by accident, mostly, you are finally put to death. But when people like that can basically go live on death row, and don't get me wrong, I know death row is no bed of roses. I realize they're in 6x9 cells. They've got a toilet. They've got a wash basin. They've got a bed. And that's pretty much it. But still, they're alive. And they're laughing if they want to laugh. And they're enjoying things they can listen on the radio or TV even. That's not death. I'm sorry. That's not a death sentence. That's a life sentence. And eventually, hopefully, they will be put to death. But
I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt.
It's okay. It's okay.
But I think the justice, the legal system. Certain people in the legal system have recognized that there have been people who have been put to death erroneously and were later found through DNA or something that they did not commit the crime. And so they use these kinds mm-hmm. of examples mm-hmm. to say, well, we can't put him to death. We need to let, even if it's been proven he's mm-hmm. admitted to the crime and there's legitimate evidence, I think, yes, I believe in capital punishment.
I believe in capital punishment, and I believe sooner than later. I think within weeks, maybe months, but not years or decades, after the verdict's been passed, the death verdict, that is, that individual should be put to death. And in some cases, probably within days, they should be taken out behind the courthouse and executed. Yes, it's true. We're going to execute some people that are innocent. That's the way it's going to be. That's the way it's going to play out, because I think probably that's our penalty for allowing so much crime to be so pervasive in our society. Yes, there are going to be a few people who do unavoidably die from this. But what else can we do? What we're doing right now is certainly not working. Now, maybe someone can quote some statistics to say it is. I beg to differ. I live in an urban area, large urban area, Tampa, St. Pete, and I do have a pretty good sense for what's going on out there, and it's getting worse rather than better, and we're just getting more acclimated to it, and I think that's the only explanation for why we are still tolerating such levels of violent crime. But anyway, that... That's a hot button item for me, by the way, as if you couldn't tell.
Right.
Crime in America.
And of course the prison system has changed. It has become privatized, so that judges often are paid for nonviolent people to be sent to prison simply because they can use them for slave labor, where they get paid a dollar an hour to produce for various corporations around the country. And somebody in the chat room said, would you volunteer to be torturer or executioner? And quite frankly, I do think that it takes a special person to be an executioner. You wouldn't apply for a job if you didn't think that, if you didn't have a strong belief in capital punishment, but I do believe that whether somebody faces capital punishment and is executed, they will certainly what you broadcast out to the loving intelligence, I won't say God, but what you broadcast, you get back. And I do not believe that we were placed on the earth to kill and destroy each other. And
I can say this, Deanna, a rhetorical question by whoever that was on the chat room. Yes, you're listening to somebody who could actually put to death someone. If I know the entire circumstances of the crime committed, more than once I've felt the urge to just blow somebody's brains out, quite honestly. No, I'm not talking about torture. I could never do that, I'm sure. But as far as putting to death someone who has done some of these crimes, yes, you're listening to him right now. Of course, none of us grew up thinking we would be executioners, which is another term for being a murderer. But some of the depravity involved in some of these crimes I'm talking about right now, it transcends virtually anything I'm aware of or have heard of. And yes, to correct one of nature's mistakes, I could definitely kill that person. I'm not trying to talk tough. I'm just trying to say
that
when you reach a certain point, yes, without a doubt. As far as the torture, that's the only place where I would give some ground. In other words, does that make us any better than that creature who did what he did, or she did what she did? But I think you know where I'm going with no, it'd be over and out pretty quick. But this idea of spending the next three decades on death row for some of the crimes that you read about have been committed, this is nonsense, and it's a way to perpetuate violent crimes. In other words, yes, it may not be living in Las Vegas, but it's still being alive, laughing, playing cards, talking, watching TV, getting fat, as some of them do, exercising on the yard.
Living their life just behind bars.
Pretty much.
As they would. And you speak from a certain perspective because you have delved into the details, the exact details of these crimes. And so you are looking at it with your heart. You're not looking at it to say, oh, well, I'm going to get that guy for what he's done. No, you're looking at it with your heart. You're speaking, you're acting in behalf of the murdered victim, the victim who was tortured and put into such a situation with all the details that you include in that book, Toledo Blade. And I can't even think about that book without getting emotional. So you are speaking as an expert on what some of these monsters have done to their victims. And recently there was a piece about Ted Bundy on television, and all of the things that he did and the people that the women that he murdered, and had he been evaluated and looked at, and he moved from community to community. He joined a church in Utah, the famous Utah church, and was active, and he was playing a real part in the community. He was an up-and-coming Republican, and he put on quite a show. He was obviously a psychopath, but he murdered. There's no idea to how many women he murdered. It may have been as many as 100. Of course, he deserved to be executed in Florida, and he was. And he deserved it, darn it. He deserved it 100 times.
Ted Bundy is maybe one of the scariest of all serial killers because outwardly he's a likable character. You've seen him. I have seen him. He has qualities about him that we instinctively like. He laughs easily. He is a good conversationalist. He has a panache about him. There's many things about him that are likable. And yet here's a creature who deprived us, deprived the world of maybe hundreds of children that could have been great writers, great poets, great painters. In other words, these women that he murdered, slaughtered, they never had children. Not a one of them that I'm aware of. In other words, he stripped the rest of us of the of having these people in our lives, our communities.
Right. The families, all the families that were involved.
Yes.
All righty. We are, we'll be right back. We're going for a quick 3-minute break.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s. Along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hi, folks. CBD is the home run hitter for health right now. Why, you ask? Because of what it does for the body. Unfortunately, I can't tell you all about the benefit. You know, there's reasons. Do your due diligence and log on to ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Ancient Life Oil uses organic ingredients and is blended in coconut oil for some of the best benefits. Legal in 50 states and non-psychoactive. Log on to ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Do you worry a lot? Whether you're a college student, busy professional, parent, or grandparent, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in 1 to 2 weeks. Call 1-800-758-8746 or calmandclever.com.
We are back, and our guest today, and actually we have two guests, but our guest is Michael Thomas Goodrich. He is the author of numerous books, including Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944 to 1947, and his latest book, Summer, 1945, Germany, Japan, and the Harvest of Hate. He's also written several other great books, and the one that we were just talking about was one that that was incredibly insightful into a young lady's life and the criminal, the monster that destroyed her, and the name of that book is Toledo Blade, The True Story of the Abduction, Rape, and Murder of a Cop's Daughter. And it was an amazing book.
You know, Deanna, I should mention probably this, I don't know if this is a good time for it or not, but I'm working on another book right now. It's going slowly, unfortunately, because I've got so many things backed up in my life, including what we'll be talking about in the next hour with a good friend of ours, Mr. Paul English, appropriately from the United Kingdom, that is Great Britain. We'll talk about that. But I'm working on a book called Israel's Assassin, America and the Middle East Massacre, 2001-2020. And I think anyone who hears the subtitle, that is the date, 2001, of course, that's the story begins with the false flag event in New York City on 9/11. Mm-hmm. And then the, like a dutiful dog, the obedience of America to Israel to go off and basically attack everybody in the Middle East that doesn't agree with Israel. And so that'll be the the book. It'll be very similar to Hellstorm and Summer 1945. It will name names. It won't hesitate to call a spade. It will tell it the way it is. It, to this very day, it's continuing, of course. But that's the one I'm working on right now. And
That ought to make you friends in high places. I'm sure that the mainstream media will want to reunite their relationship with you and talk about this. Right?
You might be surprised at some of the friends I've made with my books, though. I'm talking about Academy Award-winning directors, higher-ups in the EU, that is the European Union, people who are at the top of the food chain in their professions, pilots, lawyers, doctors, people like that, musicians. And so, yes, we've got our own community now. We don't need to go searching for friends among the enemy. We know they're our enemy, and I care less what they think about me or what I write. So we've got our own, the best and the brightest are on our side now, and that's the way it's going to stay until we have final victory in this war we're in right now. Replacement in both America and Europe. Of course, that's an act of war, in my opinion, this idea to replace us with everybody that can creep, crawl into our nations. That's the war we're in, and that's the war I'm fighting right now against.
Mm-hmm.
But, like I said, I don't think I'll be writing any more true crime books,
it's too heartbreaking.
Let me say about the Toledo Blade book, which is available, by the way, on Amazon.com. The family, both sides of the family, the husband's family and the victim's family, were skeptical about me when I started talking to them, because there had been other authors who had talked to them and they saw the results. Basically, it was money for murder. I think that's the way someone termed it, that murder can be translated into money. And they realized pretty quickly in the interview process and finally when the book came out that wasn't my approach to it at all. It was basically someone, a valuable person, had been wantonly murdered, slaughtered, after she went through terrible torture. And it was and remains my object to tell stories like that so that it doesn't happen again, quite honestly. And they understood after the book did come out that I was not in the murder or the money murder type of situation. It was basically, and to this day, we're all friends because I told their daughter's story as well as I could.
Right. Oh, absolutely. You did. Absolutely. And I don't think anyone else could have done the job that you did. I really don't. I think you did a marvelous job of bringing her. You presented her story for her. That is how I felt when I was reading it, that it was something that you were doing for her. And she couldn't tell her story